Gentlemen and lady, it is Sunday, May 15th, 2016. Today has great significance for me because a grandson was born on May 15th, and we got the call in the middle of the night to come babysit for his older brother. And I remember I drove backwards on a one-way street to go from Neely, if you recall, to get there as quickly as possible to my daughter's house. It was like 2 a.m. I drove one way, the wrong way, and I got there, and Baruch Hashem, today it's many decades later, and this particular boy looks down at me. I think he's 6'3", and he looks down at me, Kanayin Hara. Okay, where was I? Did I give the date? May 15th, correct? All right, we're ready to roll. A few announcements following up the questions I threw out on certain matters that have happened. Number one, a Talmud from this very Kollel, many, many years before the youngsters here were born, has a shul in his home in Efrat. And he announced that there's a tefillah chagigit shel Yom Ha'atzmaut on Friday, al pi piskei harabbanan, maranan v'rabbanan, and he quotes Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Gorin, and Rav Heschel Shechta. I just want to go on record that the question of Yom Ha'atzmaut being moved the day earlier did not exist during the Rav's active lifetime. This making it a day earlier when it falls Saturday night, like this year, when it falls Friday, and then they move it a day earlier, it happened much later. It's a reflection of Israeli society. When I came in Aliyah, it releases Jews as a vestige of the past. Today, as you know, the secularists in Israel are shaking because in Jerusalem alone, 3/4 of the children are getting a religious education or a Haredi education. I think the other quarter are divided between Mamlachti and Mamlachti Dati. Also, the average number of children in schools in the regular sector went up something like 12% in the last 10 years, 91% in the Haredi school system. So they brought around about this change to give us less Chilul Shabbos. I don't know how anyone can quote the Rav, but halacha lemaisa, it is a great investment in the Jewish people to avoid Chilul Shabbos. And much has been written on the topic. All I can just tell you, it's an open Mishnah. HaMegillah nikreit b'yudalef, yud bet, yud gimel, yud dalet, tetvav. You're all familiar with the Megillah, you're all familiar with the Gemara in Masechet Megillah. And there are many reasons you can make it a day earlier. Friday, I didn't say in my shul, we didn't say Tachnu, we didn't say Lamanetzeach, but we didn't say Hallel. We certainly didn't make big festivities on Friday.
Why did you leave that shul if they don't say Hallel?
Friday, I said Friday we don't say hello. Thursday we said hello. In my shul they say, relax, in my shul they say hello with a bracha. I don't say with a bracha because I'm a Talmud of the Rav and I can't bring myself to. So I'm here, let my children say with a bracha, my grandchildren say with a bracha, and my great grandchildren will soon be saying with a bracha. Maybe one of them already says with a bracha.
You should say with a bracha. You got three
Tzamchanim. I got three? Five. You're understating the Rakefet family. But okay. I'm entitled to be a Talmud of the Rav. There's no formal takana, but the children and grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, let them take it further. Now, we raised the issue of why the calendar is driving us crazy. And here in Israel, we read Parshat Emor, we're one parsha ahead of the Golah, and it's going to take the Golah to catch up with us the week, 1 week before Tisha B'Av, they finally will catch up with us. Why are they killing us? They can read Baha B'Kotai together and join with us. Relax. Acharemot Kedoshim together and join with us. I can tell you I'm not the only one who asked the question. I see the question has come up already on every website that deals with Torah. Without going into great detail, I received many wonderful answers from people throughout the world. essentially, it is goes back, and I'll give you sources because I don't want to spend the whole shit. I just want to make a very important point. It goes back to the fact that in Eretz Yisrael we're on a 3-year cycle. In Chutz Laaretz we're on a 1-year cycle, and there were differences and all the time. Now, the reason that we have to read what we're reading is that Minhag Yisrael is that Vamidbar should always be read before Shavuot. Why should Vamidbar be read before Shavuot? Because you want to break the curses of Bechukotai. You're going into Shavuot, you're being Mekabel the Torah, the heartache is over, the curses are over, we're now being Mekabel the Torah. Fine. To feel it all the more, we prefer, and I'm quoting sources now, we prefer not to have 2 parshiyot after Bechukotai, but only 1. And that's why in Chutz Laaretz, they don't want to catch up with us. They want it to be Vamidbar. Naso will be after Shavuot, and we'll catch up weeks later. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't have a choice, so you'll have 2 parshiyot. And that is essentially the main reason why we have this Seder. Here I want to move sideways and take you back to last week's share, where I gave a drush, you'll see in a minute, that Herbie Maltz wasn't the only one to pledge money during the drusha. I want to take you back to Maplewood, South Orange, 1962, and it's Yiska time. And here I am preaching to the audience, and remember, this is not an audience like the audience sitting before me, B'Yerushalayim, Mir HaKodesh. This is an audience, an American audience. Many of the people barely can read Hebrew. Many of the people, their whole attachment to Yiddishkeit is remembering their grandparents. And here I am speaking about Yiska. If you recall last week, I preached the drasha of the doors, that why is Yiska so important? We're opening up a door to the past, and if we can open up a door to the past, and if we can appreciate the past, then we can open up a door to the future, and we have a future. And now let me go further and quote Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, quote the Rav, and I go further. And my dear friends, we're calling upon you to reform your lifestyle, to conserve the heritage of our people. We're calling upon you to appreciate the ennoblement of the kosher laws, of the family purity laws, of the sanctity of the Sabbath. And I see in the audience some of you are thinking, the rabbi is talking to me. Who am I? What do I know? How can I? It's too much. It's overwhelming. The burden is too great. My dear congregants, men and women, please, this is why we read Parshat Vamidbar before Shavuot. Do you recall the last Sabbath, a few days ago, before this wonderful holiday on which we are saying Yiska, we read Parshat Vamidbar. What characterizes Parshat Vamidbar? The census of the Jewish people. Every last person is counted. Minhag Yisrael, Jewish tradition, custom has it, insists that we read Parshat Vamidbar before Shavuot. Do you know why? Rabbi Soloveitchik explained this custom, because sometimes simple people like us, simple Jews, we're overwhelmed. How can we? Do we have it within us? Can we rise to the occasion? Can we accept the burden of all Malchut Shamayim? Parshat Vamidbar has a fundamental message for us. Every Jew counts. That's the census. You have the ability. You're a Jew. You're part of the people. It's inborn. You are b'nei, children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You can receive the Torah, accept the Torah, and live with the Torah. There's nothing to be frightened about. No need for diffidence. No need for hesitancy. You are part of B'nai Yisrael. So please join me at this Yiska, calling the past and making it real in the present so that we will have a future as Jews tomorrow. We have that ability and we can accept the challenge, the quest. Okay, that's from the Rav. To all those who gave me the reason. Now let me read. The other question I asked is, how do we say Yiska on Yontif? Which was the question I was asked in South Africa. And the question's absolutely right. Alacha kama v'kama when Yiska falls on Shabbat. Generally, many times in Chutz Laretz. I don't know in Israel. I think it can only fall on Shabbat when Simchat Torah, Shmini Atzeret, falls on Shabbat. I think my first Sukkot in Israel, look at a calendar, whether it's 69 or 70, the greatest shock of my life, that one day was Shabbat, Simchat Torah, and Shmini Atzeret. Could you imagine the joy, the dancing, the singing, the fun, the liquor, and Yiska, Shmini Atzeret, Chag B'fnei Atzmo. All right, the answer here I sort of alluded to last week. The truth of the matter is you're a very good Jew if you never say Yiska. But what happened was, and there are many sources for this, I'll give you general sources, you can check it all out if you wish. You can do a master's thesis on this, perhaps even extend it into a doctorate. The souls of the departed need kapara and Yiska too. Yiska is the day on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, our minhag is to light candles for our parents, right or wrong, yahrzeit candles. So you see, it's like that Yom Kippur is not only for the living, it's for the departed as well. So Yiska is appropriate. Once Jews started saying Yiska, and I don't know, Benji, where are you? Benji. Do you say Yiska? Do the Sfadim have that custom? No, you don't have it at all. Not on Yom Kippur either. Askara, but do you say anything for the dead on Yom Kippur? You don't think that? That's what I also think. The Sfadim don't have this altogether. But I think what happened was during the Hasidic Ashkenaz with the Crusades and all that they suffered, they started to say on the other Chagim as well. And then the Hasidic Rebbeim come along and they already make a comparison to Yom Kippur and on the Chagim, the Yushpizin, and our Avot, our Imahot come down to be with us. So it's like the dead and the living join together. And that's why we say Yiska. Rabbi Przanski, Steve Przanski, my dear student, writes, Yiska was originally recited only on Yom Kippur to affect kapara for the living and the dead, in line with the Midrash. And it brings it down. There are many Midrashim that says this. It was not recited on the Regalim. In late medieval times, Yiska was added to the Regalim. And he goes on to give the reason. The last day of Yontif became known as the day of Matnat Yad. Because what do we read in that? Pashet Re'ei. What do we read? Ish kamanat yado kabirat Hashem, on which donations will be sought for the shul. Thus, your Yiska Drasha of last Sunday, which almost prompted me to write a check after Herbie Maltz stepped forward. And of course, once people were donating money, it became more meaningful and effective to link it to the recitation of Yiska and donate money li'ilui nishmatam. So it's not that Yiska was recited to induce giving money, but the opposite. People were giving money already, and Yiska was added as a hook. Okay, that's from Rabbi Przanski, a seasoned rabbi. I also want to thank Nachum Lem, and he sent me a whole website calendars and showing the question black and white. And I want to thank Rabbi Yonason Hertz, and he sent me, just let me get, this is a very fascinating source. If you want to look it up, it deals with something I just said a moment ago with the souls coming down. Sefer Nitnei Nitei Gavriel, Hilchat Avelut Chelik Bet, published in Yerushalayim, 2001. The author is Gavriel Tziner, and he evidently downloaded it from Hebrew books. My dear student, Dr. Alan Blau, sent me another Sefer, Nativ Bina. I'm familiar with this. Nativ Bina, HaRab Yisachar Jacobson. It's by Jacobson. Jacobson. It's in Hebrew. And it begins on page 234. Translated into English? Yeah, you're right. I have the English one, not the Hebrew one. I'm familiar with it. And I believe he was of German origins. And I believe he was a survivor as well.
And he studies the first two books that have to do with
right.
Also translated.
Okay.
So Baruch Meditations on the Siddur.
Meditations on the Siddur, it's called. Okay, so that's, you'll see everything I just said. So I want to thank more of my students who responded. I want to tell those listening in South Africa, you have guidance now. Still, many people are yelling and shouting. Put it together. If in Israel they suffer with the Vamidbar Nasa before Shavuot, why can't we have the same thing in the Golan? Rabbi Brzezinski writes he's going to be going back and forth twice before they catch up. So everyone has that headache. Okay, I also received many, many copies and asked to comment. I'll comment very, very quickly because I want to move on. First of all, I have to tell you my feeling without elaborating that we have to keep Yeshiva University in English. The person that switched it from Yiddish to English, you know the charges that were made against him, and every newspaper carried it, and every website. So if you notice, a week has gone by, and no one else has come forth to make a similar charge. I know the person involved. My brother knows him well. I spoke it over with my brother. He was my brother's classmate, always right between us. And we think it's a vendetta. Someone has a grudge to bear for something that happened. And he is a personality. You understand, he's running yeshiva, he's a dean. A guy like Rakefet could never amount to anything. Because after 1961, after that rabbinate of Lower Merion, I have to thank them again and again. I could never get angry, I could never get upset, I could never be mean to anyone. I worked for deans. They have to fire people, appoint people, tell off people, throw out students. I could never do that. So you see, this may be a student that 14, 15 years ago had a fight with the Rosh Yeshiva, and he decided to get even. If his charges are correct, more people have to come forward. Because when you act like he accuses this Rosh Yeshiva, it is an illness, a sickness. If no one else has come forward, it tells me it's a personal vendetta. Okay, finally, the Rabbi Yitz Greenberg article. You don't have to be a big gaon to see through the article. What Yitz Greenberg is saying is very simple. Why you, oh you, young Israel, guys like Rakefet and similar people are all charedim. We of Chovevei Torah and Rabbi Avi Weiss, we are the new modern Orthodox. We are the religion of tomorrow. And as part of the agenda of the new modern Orthodox, we have to have women rabbis. We have to change the divorce laws so no woman will be left an aguna. We have to have prayers like Shira Hadasha, so that men and women can both lay in from the Torah and can be shluchat tzibur, women as well as men, etc., etc. My dear friends, Rabbi Greenberg, Rabbi Dr. Professor Greenberg, whatever his titles are, he is entitled to his point of view. In my humble opinion, that point of view is pure, simple, neo-conservative Judaism. I am not a Haredi. Why you as far as I know, as far as I see, halavai YU would be Haredi, because I see good students in YU. And I told you, this past winter, I suffered when I saw YU kids from Florida who don't put on tefillin, don't go to daven, wake up 11 o'clock in the morning, head for the baseball field to practice. Shabbos, they come to shul. I don't see them davening 1 second. They're talking and talking and talking, and they're complaining to me about the blackies in YU. They're the whiteies and they're the blackies. Halavai, I would be the happiest guy. All of YU should be black, black, black. Just be frum, just be shomer Shabbos, all right? No one has to be like a kefir. Be who you are and what you need to keep you walking in the straight path. The door of yesteryear, so there'll be a door of tomorrow. But YU is not black, and Rav Kefir is not black, and Young Israel is not black, and the OU is not black, and Avi Weiss, right? You ever want to be neoconservative? There were Karoyim, there were Tzedukim. You know what happened to them, all right? What can we do? Solomon Schechter, Catholic Israel, it's just a replay of everything that happened 100 years ago. Let us move further. Adkan. We're now in the middle of Reb Menashe Klein, Reb Menashe HaKatan. We'll be dealing with him for decades to come. The Ribbono Shel Olam should give strength. I have to plan what I have to plan, and I hope the Ribbono Shel Olam will go along with me. There was a B'nai Akiva reunion. I just told Talmud this story on last Monday. She had to be 70 or over to attend B'nai Akiva North America. And all the people I grew up with were there. Yitzchak, were you there? You weren't there. So my brother was there. So my brother said, everyone asked me. Yeah, my brother told them, Monday, you expect my brother to come? He's teaching. He's alive and kicking. And they all looked at him. Your brother is still teaching? So we're now in the middle of Reb Menashe Klein. And we're dealing with a tshuva that he wrote to Dov Frimma. And this is one of the most fascinating shivas you will ever put your fingers on, because they're discussing feminism. This shiva was written, the year is 1986. It's when this whole feminist movement is fermenting, and you have the Jaffa Jewish, what does it stand for? Jewish Orthodox
Feminist Alliance.
Jaffa. Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance, everything is crystallizing then. Everything you have at the Kotel with the women, I mean, giving Birchat Kohanim, I thought it was a joke, but I couldn't believe it. I saw the tshuva that was written. I think a kid learning in a Mamlachti Dati day school at the age of 9 can refute what was in that tshuva. But all right. Zalman Zangizm, if I had my way, let the women do what they want, I wouldn't, they're on the other side of the machitza. Our biggest mistake is to fight in public. Then you attract attention, they get publicity. Millions of dollars pour in by people who hate black,
Haredim.
What are you saying?
Say
that they'll tell you that they're modern Orthodox. They'll tell you exactly what Rabbi Greenberg is saying. Anyway, all this was crystallizing, and here Dov Frimmer, who's a YU graduate, Dov Frimmer, you understand, comes from the modern Orthodox world, and he is friendly with Reb Menashe Klein. And Reb Menashe Klein, I don't have to tell you, Hungarian survivor, Kloisenberg Chassid, the rabbi of Eli Wiesel's best friend, closest friend. And as Eli Wiesel writes in his memoir I quoted to you a year ago, 2 years ago, that if I have to turn to a rabbi, the rabbi I turn to is my good friend Reb Menashe Klein. Fine. Now, how do you deal with the feminists who say, and you hear this all the time, the New York Times just had an article, I heard it on the, it's a good sign when the Israeli radio, that the leading news item is, and there's nothing to report from here, Baruch Hashem, everything is here, b'shalom, b'shalva, b'nachat, there's no problems here. But the New York Times had an article on the future president of the United States, Donald Trump, his attitude towards women. And they interviewed 50 women, and some of them say he was terrible, he was horrible, he looked down, and others say he was wonderful and good, and you get involved already in the whole question of our attitude towards women. So the first point that Rav Menashe Klein made, and that's exactly the point that the Rav made, and you'll hear it from the Rav, but right now you're hearing it from Menashe Klein, is that we are an army. And an army has divisions. Legion, he calls it, a legion. It's the Lashon of the Medrash, legion. And it's probably a Roman word. I can be corrected if anyone is a scholar in Greek and Latin. If Rav Shaul Lieberman would be with us, he would give us the whole story of this word, legion, what it means and where it comes from. But it takes us back to the arguments among my grandchildren. Who is more important, the Tzanchanim, or the Shiryon, or the artillery? Everyone in the army has a different role. And I once told my grandchildren, they were making fun of the Jobnikin, you know, the people who work in an office and in intelligence, or simply taking care of clothes and water and food. I said, without that, you don't have an army. That's the Rabbaz. When the Mishnah in Sota says that at a Milchemet Mitzvah, you even take the Chatan V'Kala out of the Chuppah and send them to the army. So what does it mean, the Kala? The Chatan, I understand. The Kala, so the Rabbaz says, they have to provide the logistics, the food, the drink, etc. Turn it into modern terms, it means the women play a big role in the army. If they would have listened to me, it would be in the logistical part of the army. But I told my grandchildren, without the logistics, you can't win. You need every part of the army. Look what happened to Napoleon. Look what happened to Hitler when they came into Russia in the height of winter and didn't have the clothes, the warmth, the oil to deal with it, the heat. You need everyone. So he makes the point, and this you can't argue with it. You can take the biggest Gaon and Tzaddik, and everyone can give a deal. I'll say the Rav. Some of you can tell me Rav Shechta. Some of you can tell me Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. Some of you can tell me Rav Shach, Rav Avadya Yosef. If they're not Kohanim, they can't do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Can be the biggest Gaon, can be the biggest Tzaddik. But there's a Kohen, there's a Levi, everyone has an assignment. And it's no comment on who is more important. Chas v'chalila, women are just as important as men, but they have a different assignment. Then he goes into a second point, which we ended off the class with, which I fell open for discussion, not in class, but you can think about it. Is it valid? Isn't it valid? I want to say something today that I didn't say last week that's very important. And he makes the point that you look back, I look back to my childhood. Remember I told you my father didn't know how to make himself a cup of coffee. Not only my father, when my mother remarried, and she remarried a wonderful man, Rav Meisha Aperbach, you got to know who I'm talking about, there's a Yirat Tzadik, born in America, and what children he has, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. So Rav Meisha didn't know how to make himself a cup of coffee either. So I remember when my father came home from work, the table was set, food was ready, my mother cooked, my mother shopped, everything, the women, the children, we needed help with our homework. Who did we turn to if not our mothers? I never turned to my father. My father came home, he was exhausted, wiped out. My mother, who had gone to college, she dropped out because of the recession. I think in Hebrew, Hashefel HaKalkali, recession in English. So I would turn to my mother. All right, it was a beautiful home structure. The mother raised the children. This was her role in life. Now, and this is why Rav Menashe Klein says, and he's echoing, he doesn't give sources, but I can tell you, you can find this in the Avudraham, you can find it in Rishayim, that a woman is exempt from mitzvah asei shazman grama, because her lifestyle does not allow her to stop the clock. And you see, right now, we have right here in the Kollel, everyone is asked to daven for Sherry's son. He was diagnosed with diabetes. Who's at the hospital? Who's taking care of him? Who's with him? The mother. The example I gave you is irrefutable. When you go into a hospital, And lo aleinu, people are critically ill. You hear them shouting, yelling, crying, mama, mama, muta, muta, ima, ima. It's, you're not going to hear Abba, Abba, Father, Father. And this is the way God made the world. So I want to tell you something interesting. Does this apply today? All right. It's certainly on some on the basic level. Today a man no longer needs a wife to cook for him. I mean, all of us know how to cook. I don't know how to cook. I just know, I told you, I can take from the freezer into the microwave, and within minutes I have a wonderful meal prepared. All right, for Shabbos, my wife does a little work, but generally we're at the children. I see my grandsons. All of them have specialties they can make. It's interesting. They make cake. They make spaghetti. They make pizza. Oh, each kid has specialties, what they can do. And I see even with raising children, they're changing diapers. They're helping their wives. All right. But I want to tell you something. More than a good, maybe it's 25 years ago already, there was, you check it out, the history of Israel. So, there was a moment here with Shas, with the leftist government. You have to understand, Rav Ovadia was essentially a leftist. He thought the way Rav Aaron Lichter, the same Talmud that announced that he's going to say Hallel on Friday, he once went to see Rav Ovadia to tell him off that he's a leftist. And this Talmud, a bright, very bright individual, as they say, a Nibbuch Chacham. He goes to Rav Ovadia, and Rav Ovadia says to him, "Ata lo mabsutcha eluheim ha gishot shali." You're not happy that these are my viewpoints. He says, "Where do I differ than your Rebbe, than Rav Soloveitchik?" Okay, so he couldn't answer. It's exactly now. I personally have a different point of view, but I recognize that these were people who believed that we could have peace, we have to give away land, etc., etc. I'm not here to defend my viewpoint. I'm here to tell you about their viewpoint. So in the early 90s, with Peres, there was a whole deal being made with Agudat Yisrael. And I'm not Haredi. I'm not even impressed by the Haredim and their when it comes to religion, if you want to see religious people, go to Bethel, go to some of the settlements, go to Kiryat Arba, go to Hebron. You want to see religious Jews, you will see Jews. Wow. You will walk away shaking that such Jews exist among us. What a skut for us, for Klal Yisrael. But without going into more detail and not being too vulgar, money is money, and period, we'll end it there. So there was a move underway to make Peres the prime minister. Were you living here already? You remember what I'm talking about. So there was this big meeting, and they're going to hear what Rav Shach has to say. And Rav Shach also was a big leftist, and he said, "What do we need? Eretz Yisrael, the Torah was given in a midbar." All right, that's the way Rav Shach spoke. And everyone expected the deal to go through. And Rav Shach got up that night. It's the famous talk. I videoed, I have it, but it's on a video. I'm not going to spend the money to have it now, computerized. It's history. Rav Shach got up. That's the famous talk with the rabbits, that we should go with the Labor Party and we should go with Peres. Natan, then the kibbutzim, they capture rabbits and eat them. Do you remember that talk? That's the famous rabbit talk that created such a commotion in Israel. And what language is Rav Shach speaking? So I mentioned to our dear friend and student, Josh, future dentist. As I mentioned to Josh, Rav Shach has big skliyot. Remember what I told you after class? He broke Lakewood. He broke Panovich into Hebrew. Why? Hebrew was not his natural language, was not his native language. And he lived in an atmosphere of Yiddish. He spoke Yiddish to his wife. He spoke Yiddish to his children. He switched to Hebrew because, Baruch Hashem, we have an ingathering of exiles and there are tens of thousands of young Sephardic people who want to learn in yeshiva, and for whatever the reasons are, maybe one day I'll deal with it in the Monday class, the Ashkenazic yeshiva, they're on a higher level than the Sephardic yeshiva, whatever the reasons are. So, you know, the Derry learned in Hebron, and Rav Ovadia's children learned in Hebron, and Rav Peretz of Ranana learned in Ponovich. He speaks Yiddish better than I do. I taught with him in Michlala in the seven before you, long before you were born. So, Rav Shach spoke Hebrew. In this talk that he's giving, that he's talking about, and what do we want out of this new world? Look what has happened. Look how they have changed the Jewish people. And he starts talking about the Jewish home in Europe. And he starts crying, and he breaks into Yiddish. He can't go on in Hebrew. He breaks into Yiddish. And one of the most beautiful sights on the television is the Belzer Rebbe leaning over to Rav Ovadia Yosef and explaining him to him in Hebrew what Rav Shach is saying in Yiddish. And he describes the father and the mother and the home and the family and the table and the Shabbos meal and the Eshet Chayil and the children. So there's a lot to be said here. And this is exactly what Rav Menashe Klein is referring to. All right, is it totally applicable today? Think about it. The first point he made is absolutely applicable. He and the Rav, word by word. The second point, it's worth thinking about. In the old country, what a woman did. Of course, the feminist will say to you, Rabbi Rakefet, I've heard this said to me this way, we don't have to churn the butter today. We don't have to milk the cows. We don't have to bake the bread. We don't have to wash the diapers. Right or wrong, when we came in Aliyah, who heard of these throwaway diapers today? That's all you have in Israel. Okay? I mean, our standard of living here is equal to any country in the world. I mean, it's beyond words what you see, what's available. We were in El Sharad today. I showed Malka all the baking stuff available and the sprinkles. And I don't think there's a supermarket in America that has as much as Osha Ad has. And to think it all has two or three hashgachot minimum. So, Baruch Hashem, we don't have to do all that. We will have time. We want to daven. We want to learn. We want to read from the Torah. All right, could be this particular point has to be modified, but it's fascinating. And fascinating how he speaks about Europe, and it brings to mind Rav Shach breaking down in tears. And I have to tell you, Yitz will be mad at me once again for telling you this, but I have great respect for Rav Shach. First of all, you know, his son was one of my closest friends. Yitz knows him very well, too. Ephraim Shach. We were classmates in Bernard Revel Graduate School. And we knew his father was a Rosh Yeshiva in Hadarom at the time. None of us ever dreamt, Ephraim included, that his father would become the famous Rav Shach. And I have tremendous critique in Rav Shach. There's no question he was a Balmak Loiket and he split the Aguda time and time again. But I can only tell you, I have tremendous derecherets for Rav Shach. He was sincere in everything he believed, Kulo Torah. And you know the story, it's a famous story. A kid from Belgium, I know Belgian people, people committed suicide from Belgium. Fathers forced them to come here and learn in Haredi institutions. One girl, Loa Lane, who jumped with the baby in her arms from the Hilton in Tel Aviv, I believe it was in the 70s. And what a story. So this father forces his kid to go to Panovich. Kid was raised in Belgium. His father has been from Yid, the kid is from, but he's open. So one afternoon a week, the kid would disappear. So they put spies on him. When I learned in Lakewood, they also did this. They put a spy on you. So where's the kid going? To Tel Aviv U. He was taking courses, so when he leaves Panovich, he'll be able to go into their law school. Rav Shach was in Tzvat at the time. It was the summer. Tzvat is a lot less warmer than Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak is the lowland, and Tzvat is in the mountains. They called Rav Shach. It was Friday night. Thursday night. And they told Rav Shach that this kid was going to Tel Aviv U. Rav Shach said, "What?" Woke up his driver and said, "I'm coming right back to the yeshiva. I want to see the kid at 2 a.m. And the kid walks into his office, 2 a.m., Rav Shach turns his back on him and says, "Asul is takel b'fnei Rasha," and throws the kid out of Panovich. Sunday evening, the kid's father and the chief rabbi of Belgium have flown in Sunday morning. Money is not a factor. And the father puts in front of, I know who the chief rabbi was, puts in front of Rav Shach an open check, signed, "Rebbe, fill in the amount, please take my kid back." Rav Shach ripped up the check in front of his eyes. Rakefet is an admirer. I'm not a follower, not a student, but an admirer, absolutely. So it reminded me of Rav Shach. All right, now let's go further. And here I have to tell you, Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim, Reb Menashe Klein is quoting a little kid from the Bronx named Donnie Rothkopf / Aaron Rakefet, word by word by word. And let me give you the background. Here I am teaching women 31 years. You know, I taught many, many thousands more women than I taught men. With all due respects to the Kollel, how big is the Kollel? How many kids? All right, even in the days that everyone came to my shiur, no one would miss a shiur. So I taught 25 fellas. I was teaching 400, 500 girls a week, Mechala, Machon Gold. So you see these girls afterwards, the Americans who come to Israel. And I'm trying to set up a student of mine who was well into his 30s. And this name comes up, I recognize the name, Danny, whatever, this is a great girl. Yeah, he says, "Fine, check her out, I'll go out with her." I check her out, she's married with 3 children. So I say to her, "How do you retain your maiden name?" And this whole business began. I have other students. I have one student that I'm very friendly with the family. I daven with her husband every morning. and my daughter is very friendly with the family. And she uses her maiden name. What's wrong with the married name? So I finally told these people off. I said, "What you're doing, in my humble opinion, is against the Torah. Natan." They looked at me, "Against the Torah? What's wrong?" I said, "There are 2 identities that every person has. Simon, you're part of a family. Ish al mishpachto levet avotam. You're part of a family. In order to keep track, we follow the father. You're from a certain tribe, you're a Kohen, because your father's a Kohen. That's your family. Ish al mishpachto levet avotam. We have to know who you are, who your children are, what the name is. Follows the father. Okay, you're part of a family. What is important to be part of a family? Mainly it's for temporal reasons, monetary reasons. Baruch Hashem, Yomo inherited $18 million from his father. Right? Family. My money, brothers, who gets the inheritance, so much has been written, so much. How do you draw up a will? We have to know who's who. We'll talk about this later in this very class. Why does a woman have to wait 90 days before she remarries? We have to know who's who. Levet avotam. All right, temporal, monetary. But there's something infinitely more important. We are Jews. We are Torah people. We have opened the door to the past and we've received the most beautiful, magnificent, demanding, challenging heritage that any person who walks the face of the earth has. Natan and Natan, who did we get this heritage from? Josh, your father can be a goy gomor. Right or wrong? Who does it follow? The mother. Absolutely. What a smack in the face this is for the male species. We are second best if we're being optimistic. A woman, and he quotes all the Gemaras, you all know it. Your father can be the biggest guy in the world. We have examples. Unbelievable, the state of Israel. Women who lived with Arabs, lived in Shechem and Pe'ilim, saves them, brings them back. Kids are totally Jewish, 100%. This is the greatest compliment to the Jewish woman. And we have no reason for women, there is no reason for them to feel second rate or put down, or the tortured species, whatever term you want to use. And the New York Times is having a field day shooting at Trump. But we Torah Jews, black and white, it follows the mother. The biggest guy in the world lives with a Jewish woman, the kids are Jewish. The biggest tzaddik in the world, chassid, and you all know, lo aleinu, I don't understand it, but Misha, yoteh gadol mechabeiro, yitzro yoteh mego, we have so many scandals in our world, God have mercy, if you know what's going on in Yerushalayim now, I can't believe it, I just can't believe it, but it's facts, the guy's in jail. They have his picture today in the B'olam Shel Charedim blog, my friend Chaim Shulson has a picture of him, and he says, and in jail, he hears from people, he's sitting and learning all the time. What goes on? The bigot tzaddik, there was a case in Belgium, I don't want to go further, the Avishnitsa, the Gagabais, wow, lived with a shiksa. The kid is a guy. Kid is a guy. It doesn't help that you are a gon and a tzaddik and you're a chassid. The kid is a guy. It all follows the mother. And here he says something, I can't believe it. I thought I'm the only wise guy. He's quoting me word by word. A little debate in my family, my grandchildren. Well, they've grown up here, they're part and parcel of the country. They all did Hezda, they all work, they all have contact with non-religious Jews. So, amazing, I had this discussion with two of my eldest grandsons, independent of each other. Each one, they did not know that the other one had the same point of view, or at least probe the point of view. The whole question of stores open on Shabbat. This is a burning issue in the country right now. And they're telling me, look, you have so many Mechalalei Shabbos, they need food, they want this, they want that. Let a few stores be open. What are we making such an issue? I said something else. I'll tell you something. Forgetting everything else that I said, you know, the whole concept, if you start opening stores on Shabbos, everyone becomes a Mechal Shabbos, you got to keep up with your neighbor. So you'll have in Yerushalayim stores mostly will be closed in Bnei Brak. What about Tel Aviv? What about Haifa? But I said, the shopping malls, look what's going on. It's a very serious question. Thank God for Azrieli. In his malls, everything has to be kosher. And there can be nothing open on Shabbos. Thank God for David Azrieli, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the man who built Azrieli School, the graduate school at YU. So I told the kids, I want to tell you something. If our stores are open on Shabbos, we are murderers. Well, they looked at me, but they know their grandfather says something. There's meat and potatoes behind it, basaviyayim. And I explained myself. I said, what's our whole claim to the land? How do we have the right to drive the Arabs out? Everything the leftists are going crazy with. Everything that let me not criticize, the defense, God, beyond belief, what the Skan Ramatkal said 2 weeks ago, beyond belief. Well, everything that the Arabs are saying, we killed the Palestinians, we're worse than the Nazis.
Please, not now.
But it's worse, Eisenhower, and support from the chief of staff and support from the minister of defense. I said, the only reason we have a right to be here, that we're the heirs of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov Avinu, and we were given this land by God. Yomo, if we're Machalo Shabbos, we're not the heirs. The door to the past is closed. We have no right to this land. Every time we defended ourselves, we were murderers. The Arabs are right. Go back to America. You know what the English people are saying. Biggest mistake England ever made was the Balfour Declaration. Labour Party. People have said it. Quote, end quote. He says exactly the same thing. Our only right to the land is the fact that we are Jews. If we're going to listen to the feminists, and there's no religion, and there are no rules for us to follow, and there's no structure to Judaism, and whoever says he's a Jew, he is a Jew, and men and women are equal, and he gives the example of the Russian immigration. Look how many non-Jews there are. All the leftists say you don't have to convert them. They quote Ben-Gurion. Who is a Jew? Whoever says he wants to be a Jew, quote, end quote, David Ben-Gurion, BG. We have no right to this land. The B'nai Yishmaelim can say, if it doesn't follow the mother, if it doesn't follow Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, but it follows the father, then we're B'nai Avraham Avinu. This land is ours. You have no right to drive us out. Wow. Powerful, absolutely correct. Did I win my grandchildren over? I don't know. It's a valid argument. I understand it. I'm very upset that in the Jerusalem area, one of the Mizrahi representatives did not come out against the stores open on Shabbos. I told my grandchildren I was seriously thinking next election I vote for a Haredi party. Because to me, that the stores closed on Shabbos is of supreme importance. And I want to tell you, I grew up in America, everything was closed Sunday. Who heard of a store being open Sunday? And yet we managed. You know, you planned your shopping around it. It's a small price to pay to live in Yerushalayim. But I understand there's another point of view, live and let live. All right, on a private level, I'm not ready to look into anyone's pot or pan. Do what you want in your house, do what you want behind your bedroom door. Freedom of democracy, absolutely. But this democracy, remember, this is a democratic state and a Jewish state. And in the public thoroughfare, Judaism has to trounce democracy. And I quoted to my grandchildren, I said, even Aaron Barak, who is no Talmud Chacham, the man far from it, a Talmud of mine invited him for Sudat Shabbat, this goes back many years, he didn't know how to do Netilat Yadayim. I mean, could you imagine the head of the Supreme Court? And when that case came up that they sued the government because the government did not allow the import of non-kosher meat, well, from the point of view of democracy, they were absolutely right. But Barak led the way in writing a response, I'll call it a tshuva, I don't know what he called it legally, a legal brief, in which he explained that we are a Jewish state and a democratic state. And we have to weigh which wins out when there's a conflict. And when it comes to the importing of meat, he goes with the Jewish point of view, because everyone can eat kosher meat. But for a Jewish state to bring in chazer treif meat, somehow it doesn't fall under the category of Judaism. And here democracy has to give in, because you do not suffer if you eat kosher meat. So this is a very, very important point. Then he goes on, of course, and he continues with the women, with Hanukkah, with Hannah, everything I mentioned last week, that here you have a woman. And so many laws about prayer we learn from Hannah. How do they describe her praying? Her lips are moving, but there is no sound. And that's exactly the way we stand Shmona Esrei this afternoon. Perhaps 4 million Jews across the world are davening Mincha. 4 million men. And every last man is davening like Hannah. And how can you say we don't respect the women? And then he makes a point that I want to elaborate for a few minutes, because I don't realize if he realizes how he has described the contemporary situation. He says, what's going to happen? The liberal, the feminist, they want to go learn. They want to go study. So the men who are obligated to study, obligated to davening, the women are going to say, you stay at home. We will take care of this for you. We want to daven. We want to study. And he says, ultimately, you'll have the women doing everything and the men doing nothing or next to nothing. Tell me, where has this happened? Do you know what's going on in the world today? Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah
Bedvaro. It's very common in the conservative
world. If you now go into JTS, are there more men studying for the rabbinate or more women studying for the rabbinate? Go into Hebrew Union College, many more women than men. And ultimately what you see, and he touches upon this too and I'll elaborate, is that a woman is much closer to God than a man. And this was an interesting talk that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik gave in the 60s, and scientists reached the same conclusion from scientific studies. And Rav Aaron's talk, very powerful talk in the 60s, Rav Aaron went, he spoke to Young Israel groups, Yavne was the kids going to college. This is before, like today, you have in every college campus some Orthodox or Tua, you have Chabad, you have the OU, you have a lot of work on the campuses today. In the 60s into the 70s, it was an organization of students called Yavne. Rav Aaron spoke, and Rav Aaron spoke why women, again, that the feminist movement was beginning, the questions were being asked, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik went with the theme that women don't need as many mitzvot as men. Women are exempt from mitzvot asay, and one of the reasons that men have to be tamed, men have to be trained, men have to be brought closer to God. Women are naturally closer to God. And Rav Aaron gave a very interesting reason. It has to do with the biological, physical difference between men and women. And the fact that a woman has a period and then again the cycle begins, it teaches the woman, it's subconscious, but it gives the woman the message, life, the ability to create life, the loss of life, life cycles within a woman's body, there is Sefer Kohelet speaking to her. And Rav Aaron said that, and some people, you know, smirked. Scientific research, check it out, came out years later with exactly this concept. So you see, he makes the point here, time after time after time, we have respect, legions, everyone has their role. Chana, it is not disrespectful, it is understanding the difference between the male and the female. This is ontological. It cannot be changed. It's part of God's creation. And I have to tell you, this is the greatest challenge we have today in our world, in the modern Orthodox world, where women can do everything, where women can conquer the world, where women can do any type of graduate school study, where every door is open for her. And will she be a mother? Will she desire children? Will she remember to marry? How do we deal with the basic drive of a woman? Chava, aim, kol, chai. How do we deal with it? How do we balance it out? How do we keep it alive despite feminism and all that's available and open and the doors and the prestige and the attraction? And this is a real dilemma that we face. If you notice, in the Haredi world in Israel, they came out with haramim against women going to general colleges, secular colleges. All the education has to be in our own schools. They're struggling with it too. They didn't come out with that prohibition if not for the fact that on the ground there had to be reasons why they sought to make it black and white. And you know what's going on in Israel? Because there's so many Haredim, thank God, and the universities have to keep going and employ faculty, every university in Israel has already a Haredi division. You have in Bar Ilan, you have in Tel Aviv, you have at Hebrew U, where women can study classes, women only, men only. They're reaching out for many reasons. This is a real challenge. You have Haredi colleges. Some of the world of the Haredim is not so happy with Adina Bar Shalom. Right or wrong, those of you who know the Shas politics and the Shas Chachmei HaTorah, and this is a problem that we are facing and challenged with, and we don't have black and white answers. Where do you draw the line? We're living it, okay? We will ultimately come to a good solution, but right now we are part of the quest, part of the challenge. It's very, very interesting what he says. Okay, now I want to go one further from his tshuva and bring it right down to our level and our future as Rabbanim, as Poskim. The women, the female libbers, call them what you wish, Jaffa, they always quote from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. A little bit of a background. You will take it as axiomatic that you need 10 men to form a minyan. And yet all of you know, and there's a lot of halachic material on this topic, perhaps if you only have 9, you can take a non-man, such as a young kid, put a chumash in his hand, and count them for the minyan. It's a machloket haposkim, but certainly Rove Poskin, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and others are Mikil. All right, they may limit to say one Kaddish, not more, etc. Now, what does this mean that you count someone who's not an adult male to a minyan? How can it be? So the Rishonim struggle with this. Many reasons are given. One reason is that when you have nine, it looks like a crowd. So you can take a kid already. It passes for 10. In other words, what that opinion is saying is that it's an insult to God to have public prayer without at least 10. So if you have 9, it's a crowd. Sometimes you make a mistake. I've seen already shul start davening with 9 people because it looks like 10. So if you take a kid, all right, Mela, that's the 10th. Mori Rebbe used to say, and it's based upon Tosfot, I can't go into all the details now, but Mori Rebbe used to say that it's not that you're counting a kid. Why do you want the kid? Eventually, I say to hold the Torah, today we hold the Chumash, it means you're counting God. That when you have 9 people, God comes down as if the Shekhinah is coming down to join you. So it's like you're counting the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's even an opinion that you can count the Sefer Torah without a kid holding it. So again, it's the same concept that the Ribbono Shel Olam is joining you. So let me read to you from the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Now the Shulchan Aruch Harav, again, we have to say a few words. Shulchan Aruch Harav was a masterpiece by the founder of Chabad, by Rav Shmuel Zalman of La'adi. Rav Shmuel Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, wrote the Tanya. The Tanya is Chassidus already. The Shulchan Aruch Harav is essentially Psak Halacha on the highest level. Rav Chaim Briska considered the Shulchan Aruch Harav to be a gon adir. The Rav held very highly from the Shulchan Aruch Harav. If you'll ever hear lectures by my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe's son, you'll see how he talks about the Shulchan Aruch Harav. So I want to get any bug out of your head that you just heard Rakefet say Shulchan Aruch Harav from the first Chabad Rebbe. Maybe it's not on a proper level. It's on the highest level possible, and the greatest Litvisha minds bowed before the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Now, I do want you to understand, at times he brings in a Hasidic concept. But those concepts, it's clear to you that that's a Hasidic concept. I give you a simple example. You all know the example. It's in the first siman, actually, Shulchan Aruch Harav, where he speaks about why you have 2 days Yontif in Chutz Laretz and 1 day Yontif in Eretz Yisrael. Do you remember what he says? I don't understand it, but I can repeat it. The emanations from God differ from day to day. And in Eretz Yisrael, one day it's holy, the next day it's profane, it's weekday, chol. That's why there's only 1 day Yontif. But in Chutz Laretz, you have 2 days of sanctity. The third day is chol. That's why there are 2 days of Yontif. His grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, takes it, I quoted this in class years ago, gave you all the sources, the Tzemach Tzedek, takes it further, and he says, in Eretz Yisrael, we're closer to God. We can feel the Kedusha in 1 day. But when you live in Lakewood, far away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you need 2 full days to warm you up with the rays of Kedusha. You got it, Natan? That's a little Hasidic injection. Very interesting injection. But you know it's Hasidic. But 98% is pure halacha. Now, I'm quoting from Birchat HaShacha, Hilchot Birchat HaShacha, Siman Nun Hei, Subdivision Hei. Nun Hei, Sif Katan Hei. Yesh Matirin Loma Domeshe Bekedusha Betet, Vitziruf. Eved, what kind of Eved does it mean? Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani is chayv in mitzvot like a woman. Bitzir of Eved, Oisha, O katan lefi sha'al kol asara b'nei brit. Look at his language. If you have 10 people who are Jewish, basically Jewish, obligated to observe, and Eved has to observe. He became an Eved to be a Jew, but because he's an Eved Kanani, he observes like a woman. When they mishachrich him, he becomes like a full Jew. When you have 10 people of Torah origins, B'nai Brit, Jewish origins, Hashchina Shoreh, the Shechina of God, rests upon them. Ela she'ena kavod shemayim lomad davasha b'kedusha, b'pachat mitet b'nei mitzvot. And what's the reason? She'tet nirim kiyud. And he has a footnote, you have the sources. Because like I told you, that 9 people looks like 10. But then look how he goes further. Ublvad sheyiyeh hakatan, the katan that you're counting, yoter miben vav shana, more than 6 years, v'yodeya lemi mitpalalin, and he knows to whom you're davening, shepachat miben sheish, afo pin sheyodeya, ain dato klum. Even if a kid, you know, they tell stories about Reb Chaim, how bright he was at the age of 3, the whole story with the apple, where he forgot to make a bracha, and his Rebbe rebukes him, and he rebukes the Rebbe's Rebbe, that this is, that you're mad at me. Imagine your Rebbe, that he raised the Rebbe, that doesn't teach his students to make bracha, etc. There's a story somewhat like that. I hope I have it right. But I have more stories with Reb Chaim. But nevertheless, you have to be 6, because until 6, you're not really cognizant of what God is really about. All right, so that's one point of view, that you count an Eved, an Isha, a Katan, to fill in a minion. V'yeshomrim, she'ein Isha v'Eved o Katan mitztafim b'shum Inyan, Ela shetzarich sheyaho kol asaras charim b'nei cholim gedolim sheviu beit sarad umipachat pochot mikan ein hashchina shoreh ve'ein omrim davashe b'gedusha v'afil yedei sefer Torah shemiyad ha'katan ein letzafo v'cheinika. And then he brings the other point of view, that even if you have 9 with a kid, and the kid is holding a Sefer Torah, and that ties in very beautifully with the Rav and a certain Tosfot, that it's like you're tying the Shechinah in. No, you have to have 10 adults who are males, who are physically developed, who are considered adults, who are bogrim. That's the only way you have a minyan. So you have a machleket here, and it would seem that the Alter Rebbe, the Rav, if Baal Tanya is paskening, you cannot count in a kid. Okay, fine. But then he says something that every posek knows. Look, when there's a real machloket and there's room for the other point of view, v'af al pi ein libchot biotan shenohagim lahakel bishat hadrachat litzafo al yedei chumash Shebiado, o afilu belichumash, even sheyeshlechem al mi sheyismachu. And he says, Bishat Hadachat, it's an early Friday. I'm in the Rabman at Maplewood, South Orange, 1962. People aren't home from work yet. Of 9 people. One of my balabatim brought his son along. We wanted that milcher, it's almost shkia. All right. I'll tell the kid to hold the chumash. He goes to a day school. He knows what a chumash is about. And we'll daven. What can we do? But the eved was samech on the shita, that is mekel. So the feminists come along and they quote these words of the Rav Shulchan Aruch, v'ein limchot, and they say, look, We're like the Baal Tanya. He is really paskening b'diyeved. You can count the woman. But why can't we be counted? Why can't we take his point of view? Why can't we take it a little further? We count. We're b'nei brit. Look at his words. The Shechina rests upon us. So Rav Menashe Klein says two things here. One, very simple. I stressed it when I read the halacha to you. Did anyone pick it up? He talks about a cotton. Evidently, his whole distinction that there are people who say you can count someone who's not an adult male is not a woman, not a slave, with a katan who's a male who will grow into be a big male. It's only a question of a few years from now. Vidyavad, we can count them if we have no choice. So he's saying to the women, you're misreading the halacha here. Look it up. Read it. See the conclusion you reach. Natana Natan. And then he says something else. And when I saw what he said, I was the happiest person alive. Because he is quoting, word by word, Aaron Rakefet. And this takes me back to 2 years of Shayurim in the Gris Kollel. My dear students, a sheet of the chuya. A kid does a paper for you. And he says, I'm composing a new Shulchan Aruch, and I can't believe it. He uses this exact example. Tell me, Machlokes Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, Yomo, who do we paskin like? Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, no? Who do we paskin? Halacha ke Beit Hillel, be olam hazeh, right or wrong, bizman hazeh. Don't go into Yemot HaMashiach, Kabbalistic, that's a different story. Paskin, elu v'elu divrei lekim chayim, but you have to paskin a halacha, you follow me, Danny, you have to have a way to go, so we go like Beit Hillel. So this kid is graduating some innovative modern yeshiva high school program, and he says, for my term paper, I'm doing a new Shulchan Aruch based upon the halachot of Beit Shammai. Now, what do you say? The kid is a genius, or a rotten, delicious, hideous, heinous, brutish, depraved, degenerate, the bounce, repetitious, malevolent, apikoris. Which is it?
Number two.
Believe me, it's number two, 100%. Gentlemen, since when can you come along and take a sheet of the chuya and turn it into an entire theology? Now, what I've touched upon here, what he touches upon, and I'm sure he knows it as much as I do, or even better, we're dealing here with one of the most fascinating areas of Sakhalach. And he uses that example. He says, imagine some youngster came along and he says, they're going to write a whole new Shulchan Aruch based upon Beit Shammai instead of Beit Hillel. And you know, right down the line, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Abaye, Rav, whatever the machlek is. And you know, of course, the Rambam, the Hakdama LeMishnah Torah, how come we can't argue with the Gemara? And remember, we spoke about this ad infinitum. Yiskim Alein Kol Yisrael. We ultimately have to reach a crystallization. And I spoke with the Rav about this. I told you in 78 when I knew how to learn a little. Not a kid already of 58, 57, sitting in front of the Rav, frightened stiff. 78, I could talk with him, you know, and we spoke and we went back and forth. And the Rebbe said, yes, it's an ongoing process. It's the same story with the Shulchan Aruch. How come all you fellas are studying for Smicha? What are you studying? You're a day of Shulchan Aruch. I heard with Rav Bednash, you're studying, you're a day of Orechayim, Hilchat Shabbat. Why Shulchan Aruch? When Shulchan Aruch? Study the Rambam, study the Rav, study the Rash. Why this Psak? We open up a Mishnah Brura. Who gave you the right to open up a Mishnah Brura? An Aruch HaShulchan. Everything follows the Shulchan Aruch. Because his schema layim kol Yisrael. All right, I've given many lectures on this. It's not for now. But you see, what Rav Menashe Klein is touching upon is a very delicate question. can we ever use a viewpoint that was cast away? And this takes you into the Puntras Hashach, Psak Halacha. You'll find it in your day. I believe it's after Simon Reish Mem Bet, if I'm not mistaken. Quintus Hashach on Psak Halacha. So, I want to be intellectually honest. I want to tell you that we don't throw away a Shita D'chuya. You keep it, if I may quote Seinfeld, you lock it in the vault. Okay? You lock it in the vault. There are times that a posek may need it. You can never paskin an entire halacha on a shita d'chuya, but you can use it as a sniff, a tziruf. And I'll end off the class. I'll give you a classic example, but I want you to feel what you're dealing with here, because this is a very interesting issue that the feminist raised and Rav Menashe HaKatan deals with it. And I give you the classic example. And a lot has been written on this. In my new book, Be'ezrat Hashem, that's coming out shortly, you'll see many, many pages dealing with this. Rakafarar and Chelekim. Based upon lectures I gave in this very kollel before some of you were born. My dear students, a ship broke at sea and sunk off the Italian coast. There are many variations exactly where, but I'll say the Italian coast, the Mediterranean. We're going back 700 years, 800 years. So, one of the last of the Balei Tosfot, Yitzhak Meiberdun, used common sense, logic, rational, and this is a sugya in Yevama Tav Kuf Chachralev Tav Kuf Bet, a very famous sugya, and he said, any widows of men who are on this ship can remarry, because, and again, they're variant readings. 3 years went by, 5 years went by, 7 years went by. You'll see in the Mordechai, the variant readings.
Not the Dakor.
The Dakor, that's a minor problem compared to this. And Avad Zichra, that's the rubric which it is known under in Halacha. Avad Zichra. The husband is lost. He's definitely dead. He didn't survive. The ship sinks at sea. A plane crashes in the ocean. Let's be logical. Avad Zichra. None of the other Rishonim accepted it. They all said miracles can happen. And they quoted the Gemara. They quoted Sefer Yonah, the whale. They quoted the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Meir. You look at the Gemara, and I just referred to in Yevama. Miracles happen. But that Avad Zichra was never thrown away. It was locked up. In modern times, we pulled it out of the vault. And in the tens of thousands of Heterei Aguna, after World War I, after World War II, in the early wars of Israel, you will find tens of thousands of tshuva permitting Aguna to marry. And you'll see why. Because nowadays, we have telegraph, telephone. Today we have computers. You now can always develop a double doubt or a double majority. I published on this. This exists in one of my early volumes. I forget whether it's Chelik Aleph. I think it's Chelik Bet, actually, but I'm not sure. Or Rakafer Aron. You'll see a major piece I published on the 100th Yard site of Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan Spector dealing with this issue, which he was a master of. What does it mean nowadays? Majority of people on a boat that crashes, a plane that crashes, on a battlefield that don't come back, and a tank that was blown up. They're dead. Avant Zichro. But there's a second majority today. Can anyone give it to me? If the man had remained alive, he would have contacted his wife by now. You have to let a year pass, 2 years pass. Today you don't need more than 30 days probably.
So then well, why did it take so long with the Dakar before those women were free?
No, within 10 years. No, who told you 10 years?
I think it was 10 years.
Oh, you're talking the Dakar, the submarine, yeah. Not the Zim line. No, I'll tell you why. No, with the Dakar, no one knew what happened. They don't know that. Until today, we can't be sure that. Today, no. They could have been captured. You understand? The ship could have been overtaken by our enemies. They didn't know for sure. It only in the last decade did they find parts of the Dakar way, way underground. But the Zim line... Within 30 days, within that year, they were martyr. The trade towers, as long as you knew the man was in the building and he didn't get out, they were trade away. And what you have to know is that the husband and wife have a reasonably decent relationship. That's the mishnah. It's a mishnah yevamot. Shalom lav and shalom lo. Okay, so, but what I want to end off the class, I want you to understand...
What is the name again of the Baal Tosfos?
Reb Yitzchak Meir Verdun, the Rear Verdun. It's Verona, Verona. It's a very, very classic, basic example of Vad Zichro, how we never threw it away. We could never use it if there was no other support. But modern times, you follow after World War II, what we went through, because there was no computer. The Red Cross had list, Hayas had list, the Jewish Agency had list of survivors. And there were tragedies, few and far between, but there were. But now with the computerization, it's a different world. Today when you owe a parking ticket, they can stop you from leaving the country. The computer doesn't lie. It's an amazing, today you can't afford to be in trouble with the law because the minute they put it into the computer, they have you. And you notice when you go into America how they wave your American passport and they're looking and looking to see that nothing shows up. Something shows up, they press a button, and 1 minute later you're handcuffed. You understand? I know with Israel. Every minute that goes by, they become more infallible. We'll put it that way. As my student who taught me a lot about computers, my student says to my wife when she complains, she says, compare it to turning on a radio in 1926. Okay, so on this point that we end off with the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, yes, you cannot stretch it the way the feminists do. And Rabbi Nasha Klein makes a beautiful comparison to the kid doing a Shulchan Aruch on the Psakim of Beit Shammai. But to be intellectually honest, I have to tell you, if someone has a problem in a shul in Maplewood, South Orange, in the height of winter, and it's an early Shabbos, and he's 9, and he's 1 short of mincha, at that moment I would tell him, we can depend upon it, Shalas Smolch, on the Alter Rebbe, on the Baal Tanya.
Would you say he's Smolch on a woman?
No, a cotton. Look at Reb Menashe Klein.
What would
Morris Weinstein? He would agree with me. So that is Zichrona Levracha.
That's right. Great man.
Okay, great man. Okay, my dear students, first of all, let me reiterate. What did Vassal Megaton Heint? What do we do today? Josh, that's the way the Rebbe used to say it. So I'll teach you. Sitting next to me was Rabbi Katzin's son. You get the idea? And he knew Yiddish as well as I did. There was no choice then to spar them. Had to Ashkenatize. It's not like today. And I know in YU you have Rebbeim, Svadik Rebbeim, right? That's terrific, terrific. So they learned it from Israel. Israel is Baruch Hashem, what Rav Shach did. And I have to admit, the yeshiva went into English, Mir went into Hebrew today, You understand? We have to go. We have to go. I have to make my peace with the fact that my grandchildren rattled Hebrew. 3 or 4, she just turned 4. We had a party. Yom Ha'atzmaut, a great-granddaughter. You should hear her Hebrew. And then in the afternoon, other great-grandchildren came to see me. A 3-year-old kid, his Hebrew is 100 times better than mine. I can't believe it. Wow. If Eliezer ben Yehuda could only see what happened here. You don't realize the nes, we don't realize. And Vic, and you're worried that, I don't want to repeat your words. The nes is unbelievable. But unfortunately, Eretz Yisrael niknat be Yisurim. So what did we do today? We went for further of Ben Asher Klein. The best is yet to come. But we did speak about Rav Shach and their family. And can we really feel that way? You got to ask your wives. It's a delicate question. How do we balance out the ability of women? Shai is running home. His wife is only a medical doctor who saves life daily. You understand? He sits and learns, and she saves life daily. So you understand? How do we balance it out? We're living it. It's a challenge. The story with the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch goes way beyond this lecture. Now, tomorrow, I have to be honest with you, I wouldn't miss it for all the firecrackers and all the artwork that was displayed over Yom Ha'atzma'ot. Yitzchak, this is yours. If anyone went to Alon Shvut, this is their latest, telling their students what's going on. It's open for anyone. Josh, do you read modern Hebrew? There's an article in here on a Persian woman who wrote the book about Off the Path. You got to read the interview with her. Very, very fascinating. Okay? Don't have to thank me. Thank you for taking it. Gentlemen, 2 books if you want. This is, if you're interested, it's the 1968 American Jewish Yearbook of Jewish Publication Society. What's interesting here is the description of Russia and of South African Jewry. And it's fascinating where we were in 1988 and where we are today. It's unbelievable when you read it. This is an earlier version, 2013, of the, this is the Blumenkrantz Laws of Pesach. Very interesting, his research on liquor. I find this so fascinating. This man is really... But the Chumras, to waste time on whether bleach has to be, you know, kosher lePesach and all the cosmetics. I never saw a dog eating some of the... They once asked the Rav about the deodorant, and the Rav got angry. He said, I don't know about your dog, but my dog doesn't eat deodorant, quote, end quote.
My experience as a pharmacist in Borough Park,
right,
just before the
Pesach, right,
life-saving drugs.
Right.
Finally, I got so mad. I said to him, you want to live?
No.
Don't take it. Yeah. You know, you got to take it. Otherwise, you're going to die.
My dear students, if you know the Pesach, after St. Israel, they pass through with cycle. All the list of drugs will tell you, if you have to take it, you can take it, even it's a pill, it's not eating.
Marsha White said it's not considered eating.
Right. No, I know that. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your participation. I want to thank Natan and Benji for coming back a second time. This is your third time, so now it's a chazaka, kanayin hara. And Natan, you have 1 more week to go. And the year is almost over. What can I tell you? It's frightening. And Benji, are you going to be here next term as well? How does it work with the dental school? No, so this is just this respite now that you're coming, all right? I'm going to my son-in-law on Wednesday. I have my teeth checked. It's clean.
It's all tried.
So Baruch Hashem. And I want you to see the good work that Benji, Israeli work, the whole bottom, entirely crams. Got it? And my nephew told me, Uncle Aaron, you have no chiclets. Got it?
Nope.
Okay. I want you to do this type of work. Okay. A number one. Mazal tov.
Do you know when your last Sunday is?
Not yet, but probably before Shavuot. I don't think after Shavuot you can hold the class.
So that's late.
In June,
Do you go in the June, you think?
Yeah, in June, whatever.
So it's the third.
Yeah, and that'll
the third or fourth.
That'll end. That'll end.
What?
Doing meet again in health and happiness. That's the